Hollywood is rated LGBT radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Welcome, welcome, welcome to this podcast, Rated LGBT Radio, and this particular episode, in case you're like listening to a whole bunch of episodes all at once, is our very first of 2023. So I feel like we should be turning a new page or something like that. We're kind of showing up and doing what we always do. But as always, we have another fantastic guest lined up for you. This one I am very excited about, which, you know, I know I say that every week, because we have fantastic people to talk to. This week, however, I relate probably even more to our guest than most of the others we have. Our guest is a gentleman named Jose Rolon. Jose goes by NYC Gay Dad on TikTok and Instagram, and probably other social media. But, you know, his story is very much about being a single gay dad raising three kids in New York City. My past, as a lot of people know, is being essentially a single gay dad raising two kids in California. So very different environments, different situations. I became a single gay dad because of divorce, where I ended up with full custody. Jose's story is more tragic. He became a widower, and we'll get into the details of that. He's out there telling his story, appearing on TikTok, adorable, adorable TikTok videos with his three kids, each of which you can already tell are major talents in and of themselves. Jose has, because of those clips, several of which have gone viral, has appeared on a lot of media. He's been on the Today Show, Now This News, Ellen's Game of Games, the Tamron Hall Show, Univision Se Habla USA, and the Drew Barrymore Show. That's just the notoriety he's gotten for being a dad. He's also been the first gay dad to appear on the cover of Parents Latina magazine. Besides that, and his day job, he is a wedding planner, and he is one of the most upcoming wedding planners in New York City, which, in my California opinion, is the place you want to get married if you get married. I can't imagine a more incredible place to be for that. But his work in that industry has brought him notoriety from the New York Times, Brides, NACE. He's been featured with Martha Stewart, Essence Magazine, Catered Weddings, New York Weddings, The Best of the Knot. And he was named one of Biz Bash's most influential event professionals. Then, because he had nothing else better to do, he is also the co-host of several different shows on different media. He is the co-host on a new series on Crackle called Wedding Talk. He is the host of The No's Parenting and Parenting Wins. And over the holidays, he hosted Love Story TV's Christmas TV special, which was about a month ago on December 10th. Wow. So busy, busy man. And I just knowing what it's like to live with young kids and being their parent, I can't imagine. So he is waiting in the wings. Can't wait to talk to him and hear more about how he came to be in terms of what his life is right now. Before that, I want to go to my co-host, Brody Levesque. Brody is the editor of the Los Angeles Blade magazine. So be sure to take a look at that magazine. You should be reading it every day. It is original journalism, very much to the depth of stories you don't read about elsewhere. It is one of the most up-and-coming magazines in Los Angeles. And Brody is also our co-host and produces the show here. So with that, I'll turn it over to Brody and see what is going on in the world. And please do not tell me there's been yet another vote on Kevin McCarthy.
Okay, I won't, but there was, and there is. They just got started with round 10.
Okay, and let's go over that definition of insanity. Doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results, I think is how it goes.
It's basically the Republican version of Groundhog Day, only without Bill Murray. The United States House of Representatives has at this moment, and is it, I guess, 5 o'clock on the East Coast, still not selected a Speaker of the House of Representatives. The leading Republican Majority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, has found himself getting shot down not once, not twice, not three times, but 9 times by a very small minority of rebel Republican lawmakers that are completely and totally dissatisfied with any commitment that the Republican Majority Leader has made. They don't trust him, and quite frankly, they want to see a change. I have been literally direct texting with both Democratic and Republican lawmakers on the floor. I can tell you at this hour, the Democrats are holding steady. They have completely unified over the last 9 votes for Representative Hakeem Jeffries of New York, who is a Democratic minority leader. The Republicans are just in complete disarray. McCarthy has been getting over 200 votes on every go-around, but with the rebels holding out, there's no way for him to obtain the necessary majority threshold to become Speaker. And the way the House rules are, it's what we call the body of the whole. So in order to become House Speaker, you quite literally have to have damn near everybody, or at least over, you know, 2/3, you know, saying, yeah, we want you. Well, that's not happening here. It's, you know, and it's one of these things that we kind of anticipated, because for weeks prior to this moment, there was a lot of dissatisfaction and dissension. There were a lot of backroom meetings going on, both on Capitol Hill and elsewhere. The big sticking points for these rebels is that they really honestly, truly feel that, you know, McCarthy has got to go. They've referred to it in 4 speeches nominating their guys as the swamp. McCarthy's more of the same. They took shot at the $1.7 trillion package that was sent through just before Christmas by the previous Congress. So there's that kind of contention and drama. At this point, Republican sources are telling me that after this 10th round, and being how it's so late, there's a good chance that they're going to push for an adjournment, which the Democrats, like last night, will probably oppose. But because there is numerically a Republican majority, the Republicans will probably go for an adjournment. And then there'll be another ongoing series in that Republican conference of backroom deals trying to work things out. McCarthy is not walking away from this. He's been very combative through the entire process, and he has no intention of stepping aside. In the very now unlikely event that he was to step aside, my congressional sources on the Republican side are telling me that the most likely candidate as nominee for House Speaker would be Representative Stephen Scalise of Louisiana. Representative Scalise is someone that the rebels would probably also back, particularly because they would see that as a change, although there's some question as to whether they'd see that as a complete change. So at this hour, approaching dinner time in Washington, the still as yet seated, not quite sworn in, 118th Congress is still trying to get themselves a speaker.
Here's what I don't understand. I would think that maybe 10 Republican congressmen who are moderate to progressive would see this opportunity to step up, pull up somebody that a Republican like that, like let's say even like a Liz Cheney, and take that to the Democrats and say, we're going to put this person up. If you all vote for him and we all vote for them, then that person's in. And then those 10 Congress people would wield power for the next 2 years because, you know, they whatever they wanted to do, the Democrats would have to go along with, and the rest of the Republicans, it wouldn't even matter. So, I mean, it just seems like this huge power opportunity because invariably in Washington, it is the moderate middle that gets to make a choice on things because it always comes down to them.
In a given year, that's probably true, but we've discovered over the last few cycles, particularly since Trump took over, that the radicals, for whatever reason, don't seem to want to compromise. And as a direct result, we've seen a tremendous amount of infighting that normally you wouldn't. So it's hard to say. I do need to point out that of the 20-odd people that are rebelling against the Republican conference, virtually every one of them is rabidly anti-LGBTQ or anti-trans. They're awful.
Yeah.
So they're really bad. The other thing that we've been just kind of keeping a weather eye on, actually our guest may even want to comment on this one, Representative George Santos of New York's 3rd Congressional District. He's a Republican. He's openly gay. And he's a grifting liar. Virtually every news organization, starting with the New York Press, has just torn this guy's background apart. And it looks to us that nothing that comes out of his lips is true or even remotely close to it. And at this point, been dodging reporters on Capitol Hill. I mean, it was a shark feeding frenzy yesterday as my colleagues in the broadcast media and some print outlets went after this guy. There has been calls from New York's other openly gay representative and a Democrat, someone who's actually been on this show before, Richie Torres of New York, and the congressman is basically saying Santos needs to step aside. There are calls for him to step aside from his congressional district, from his constituency. More importantly, though, Rob, the U.S. Department of Justice, the New York State Attorney General, Letitia James, and the Nassau County, which is the largest part of the 3rd Congressional District's DA, Ann Donnelly, are all looking at him for irregularities in finance in terms of his campaign, and even the FEC is taking a hard look. So he may not actually be long for this earth. And then outside of that, we're starting a new year. We're keeping an eye on things overseas. I got to give hats off to the Irish Parliament. They just pledged a ban on conversion therapy for 2023. This is a major concession by the Parliament of Ireland to move forward on a conversion therapy ban. We certainly hope that they're able to do that. And outside of that, a little bit of cheery news. Tampa Bay Buccaneer, Carl Nassib, NFL star, on his Instagram confirmed that, yes, he is dating and he has a boyfriend. And his boyfriend is former Olympian swimmer Soren Dahl. They're a couple. And over the last weekend, they posted boyfriend pictures on their Instagram. So congratulations to Carl and his boyfriend, and we wish you quite well.
Well, and is he an active NFL player?
He's
this
not,
shows
yeah,
what
Tampa
I know.
Bay.
It's like anybody else you told that to in the world would know.
He's
a football player. Great.
He's a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. Yes, he's very active. He actually came out when he was still with the Raiders. So,
great. Okay.
But yeah, he's the NFL's only out gay player right now.
Okay, good. All right. Well, yay for him. Good job. So,
thank you,
Brody. I'm going to take you back before we bring on our guest. Just to some context. Years ago, I was submitting my blog and column to different LGBT publications. I was published on Huffington Post and Gay Star News, and I decided to try then one of the most prominent LGBTQ Nation, of which one Brody Levesque was the senior editor. And so I had written an article that I sent off to Huffington Post. I kind of was doing my own version of syndication, whether the publications liked it or not. But I sent off this article to different publications that had been publishing me. And Brody, you called me. You actually pulled me out of a meeting that because I was working in high tech, and about this article, because all of the publications wanted to use it as a headline article. And I was like absolutely mystified. And you told me at the time, you went, you're popular. And I was like, oh, really? Okay. Because all my articles were written from the perspective of a gay dad sounding off on. And the article in question was one article where I was inviting the Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy to dinner to meet my kids. And the point of that article was because marriage equality was coming up to the Supreme Court, and I felt that the Supreme Court should see what a real gay family was like. That article did get published in all those publications, although I wrote a special version of it for LGBTQ Nation because, hello, Brody Levesque asked me to. From what I understood, that article, well, first of all, Forbes picked up on it. Business Week picked up on it. It was quoted in various places. And my hope was that it was seen in the halls of the Supreme Court. And Brody, you kind of indicated you felt that had been the case. When the ruling came down, Anthony Kennedy actually, he didn't quote my article, but he did make reference to his thinking on being for the ruling. And he was another one of those in the middle of the road swing votes that I was talking about before that kind of wielded power because of that position. But his rationale for wanting marriage equality was because of the kids in gay families and that they deserved equal rights against other kids in other families. And so that, you know, hopefully that message got heard. Well, fast forward to today. We have this incredible family. Jose Roland is the dad of the family. He and his kids are making TikTok videos. And again, it's another way for the gay dad-led family to be seen and be visible. And it looks like I lost Brody there. Well, in any case, happy to bring on Jose. Jose, welcome to the show.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks for having me. And that was like the news that's coming out, right, between Carl and Soren being like this new power couple and then the news in Ireland. I was just there a month ago, and I had such a fantastic time and really the most generous, incredible people to, you know, the mess that George Santos is. That's wild.
Yeah, let's go to the George part. He's in your neck of the woods. What is the buzz in the streets of New York about him?
I mean, honestly, the buzz is the same it is across the country. I think that, like, that's how much it's sort of seeped into our nation. I think, you know, we're all sort of like, what the hell is going on with this guy? And I think there was something that just recently came out that he filed for divorce or filed for separation or something from a woman like in 2020. So there's so many wild things that are happening with him that, I mean, he absolutely 100% has to step down.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about because he he got divorced from a woman, and you know, I actually was like trying to figure this out because I was looking at pictures of him at Mar-a-Lago with his quote unquote husband, of which, by the way, there are no records in, at least in New York, of him marrying a man, and the guy looks like. I see other pictures of his staff, and it looks like a guy that's on his staff, which would not be unusual for a husband to be part of the staff, but it just, it's all very weird, very, very weird. Anyway, let's move on, because let's move to a much more interesting story, which is yours.
oh, gosh.
So let's go back to the beginning. I mean, you're growing up as a kid in a Latinx family with that kind of cultural background, figuring out that you're gay. You also, you know, somewhere in you were cultivating a desire to be a parent yourself. What was that like? What was your childhood and your self-awareness like?
Oh, you want to go like way back.
Way back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I grew up as an only child in a Puerto Rican neighborhood in the projects in Worcester, Massachusetts. And, you know, I mean, it is, you know, in our culture was drenched in machismo. And, you know, so there was a lot of that. And, you know, my father was a firefighter turned drug dealer, drug user. And, you know, he was just a really, he was a Marine. So, you know, there was just a lot of keeping things straight and being, you know, acting like a man. You know, I remember one time I was like walking to my bedroom, and it's like a small little hallway to the bedroom, and I'm walking away, and then he calls me over, and I walk over, and he goes, turn around, and then he slaps me really hard on the butt and tells me to walk like a man, not like a faggot, right? So that's just an example of like what my upbringing was. So I think like from there, obviously I was looking for some sort of form of escape. And, you know, I went to summer camp, overnight summer camp. And I think that was like a, you know, the best part of my childhood because it was a way to, you know, really get away. And then, you know, I when I found out my junior year of high school, because I did shit in like in school, I was getting like D's and F's. I never did well in school. And then my sophomore year of high school, I remember my guidance counselor telling me, you know, hey, if you maintain a BC average because you're Hispanic, you know, these colleges, obviously, that, you know, at the time, trying to fill their quota, you can go to any college you want. And it blew my mind, like that those 10 seconds blew my mind because I asked, I was like, does that mean I could get out of Worcester? And she goes, yeah, you can go anywhere in the country. And so that was my way out. And I went to UMass Amherst and then I moved to New York in 99. And I came out, you know, I came out my first year of college and that was, it was easy for me. Actually, I never really had a bad coming out story. My mom was super accepting and loving. My dad had passed away at the time. He passed away in 94 of AIDS. And yeah, so I think, you know, coming to New York felt like the next best thing for a young gay man like myself.
Yeah, no, well, it's so funny, just the intersect. I relate to you on so many levels, being a gay dad. My dad was also a Marine, although very different from your dad and just a whole lot of it. Although in 1999, I was already in that position thinking about having kids, and you were just arriving, you know, to New York, which is you know, it's just really fascinating for me to see the path I went on and the path you're on. And the difference of, you know, it's like a 15-year difference of experience.
Yeah.
My kids, I guess your son's going to turn 10 this year. My son's turned 21 this year. So it's like,
so wild.
But it's, you know, my heart moves every time I see stuff with you and everything else because I relate so much. The one,
Rob,
one of your TikTok.
Rob, I was going to, sorry, I was just going to say, you know, you were, it's really interesting hearing that from you because, you know, I describe what we're in at the moment is like, we're really at the forefront of the, you know, LGBTQ parenting is still very new in the grand picture. And I still feel like I'm part of that crew that's sort of at the forefront of it. But when you were doing it, you were walking it alone. You know, I remember going to some pride marches and, in maybe 2002, and I remember seeing these two dads with their daughter on their shoulder, thinking it was just such an odd image to me, it was just foreign to me, and I was like, oh, and for me, you know, you asked me about being a dad, that was sort of my first thing of like, oh, this might be possible. This might be possible. So yeah, it's wild. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. It was, I mean, at the time it was, you know, finding the path to do it, and there weren't a lot of doors open. In fact, California had just made it legal for gay men to adopt. It was like before, like within like months before we started doing our stuff, it had been actually illegal in California for us to even do it. It was early on. And I did, you know, I did read in something where you were talking about gay parenting was in its infancy. And I remember thinking at the time when I read that, I was going, wow, I must have been in the, you know, embryonic stage. This is like,
You were.
yeah. So it's, and that was, to that point, that was part of my drive to be visible and to be out there writing about it and be known, because I truly believe the more they see us, the more they know us, which is exactly what you're doing. That's vital, because at that point, when I was doing it, the people who were against gay parenting were just running ads with two men, two adult men, not particularly radical looking, with a baby carriage and going, oh, horrors, this is what might happen. You know, I mean, they didn't even have to embellish it much, and the sensibility was so far off that was scary to people. And now, I mean, I actually love the love that you're getting, because that's how much things have changed, that people see your family, and damn right, why shouldn't they? I mean, your family is awesome, but the defense is down on that. I did want to talk to you about one particular TikTok, and it has nothing to do with the kids, that you did that just killed me, which was your It Gets Better TikTok, where you're talking to your 18-year-old self. And people go check that out. I mean, oh my God. And knowing your story, I almost can't talk about it now. I'm choking up. But tell us what happened with you and Tim falling in love and you're starting your family.
Yeah, I will say that is one of my personal favorites too, because I have it pinned at the very top, because, you know, I was being known for being comedic or having a light sense of humor, wholesome. And I think once my stuff went viral, like, people understood that I was a single father, but they didn't understand how I became a single father. And so then there started to get some interest once the media caught on. And so I that was the first post that I put out that was like serious and more definitely like pulling at the heartstrings. And so I appreciate that. I get choked up sometimes when I see it, because it really was from the heart. So when Avery, but my husband and I got married in 2000 and 2010. And we decided once we got married, we were going to start a family. And we went through surrogacy. We found this incredible surrogate, Natasha, down in Florida. And our beautiful baby was born, Avery. And when Avery was 2 months old, Tim, my husband, came out of the room and said, hey, babe, you know what I was thinking? In my mind, I'm like, what, pizza or Chinese, right? Like, I thought he was talking about takeout. And he was like, I think we should have more kids. And that just, like, blew my mind. I was like, yeah, I remember actually saying, are you fucking kidding me? Like, seriously? And he's like, absolutely. And we went for it again. And, you know, this time, you know, we found out it was twins at week 10, which for me just made me so nervous. And Tim was just, you know, calm and collected about the whole thing. And then he went on a business trip, and I was in the middle of a Christmas party, you know, the juxtaposition of, like, you know, being at this really happy, festive Christmas party, hanging ornaments and having hot cocoa. Mariah Carey's Christmas song was, like, on the background. And then I get a phone call from, you know, the Pennsylvania PD that he had passed away. And he had passed away the night before. He was scheduled to do a presentation, and he didn't show up. And so some of his colleagues got nervous, and they found him in his hotel room, and it was a heart attack in his sleep. I do know they didn't feel it because the detective described it as, you know, both his hands were tucked under his face, and it looked like he was, you know, almost smiling. So for me, as you can imagine, that was just, it was just devastating on so many levels. But also then I only had a week to decide to follow through the pregnancy, because at 12 weeks, I wasn't allowed to make that decision anymore. And so I was pretty clear from that beginning, or as soon as everything happened, I was like, you know, I'm definitely going to abort, because, you know, who am I to raise three kids on my own? And on the sixth day of his passing was his funeral. And I remember getting up and, you know, sitting at the edge of the bed. It was still dark out. And it sort of hit me that, you know, my son just lost his father. And what if something were to happen to me? I didn't want to leave him alone in this world. So not only did I decide to follow through the pregnancy, but I announced that we were pregnant while giving my husband's eulogy. Nobody knew that we were pregnant. And that was very intentional, because I was alone, and there was a church full of 300 plus people. And that was the time to ask for love and support when the time came that the girls arrived. So yeah, it was a wild time.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine. I mean, that is, you know, and I'm almost positive that at some point there will be a movie made about your life. I mean, it's like oh my God, you know, so much emotion. I mean, and I mean, it's like you've got all of life right there in your whole experience, life, death, everything, birth, joy, sorrow, grief. I mean, it's all just so intense.
It was, the one thing I want to share with people that are listening too is Avery is Tim's biological child. And so it is this, and they look so much alike. So it is this beautiful blessing that he's left behind. And then the girls are biologically mine, but all three have the same egg donor. So it's nice to have that connection.
And spoiler alert, that's kind of one of the things in that one TikTok that absolutely wrecked me was you kind of allude to that point of looking at Avery and seeing the love of your life every day through him.
Yeah.
Which is like just, you know, it's so much. So let's go to the TikToks. I mean, during the pandemic, you got there are a lot of ideas that came up during the pandemic. And one was a really good one, which you had, which was to take your talented kids and do TikTok videos. How did that all come out?
I mean, honestly, you know, I think, you know, I've always felt like I had a really large support system, but then, you know, when the pandemic hit, a lot of us parents didn't. And, you know, as a solo parent, you know, like most of us parents it was like triple duty, right? So we had a homeschool, we had a parent, and then we had to make our businesses survive. Right. And so for me, all of those things felt really overwhelming. And I really, for me, had to figure out a way to break all of that up, because I knew that I would just drive myself crazy otherwise. And I also wanted to, you know, it became apparent very quickly that I went from really caring about their education to giving that a backseat and making sure that their mental well-being was in better shape. And so for us, you know, I always wanted to be a family that has a sense of humor and that we can poke fun of each other. And, you know, they were at the perfect age. You know, they were like 5 and 6 and pretty malleable, right? Like, you know, I could ask them to do almost anything and they're like so down and ready to rock and roll. And And yeah, I just, I was selfishly doing it for myself. And I've always documented my life through video since forever. And so I also knew that this would be something I'd want my kids to look back on and see it as a time, like this time capsule of this moment we had together. But I think what was really nice is that, you know, stuff started going viral, and I couldn't really quite understand why, because I certainly there were other parents out there and there's other LGBTQ content. But I think, you know, I think what resonated with people is there was sort of like bridging this gap between Latinx and LGBTQ, but still somehow my content was relatable to all families. And so, and mm-hmm. these are not my words. These are other people saying this about my content. And so, yeah, for me, that felt really good because it just meant that we're moving the needle a little bit. And you know, I just wanted to continue to put really good, positive things out in the world because it was really hard at the time. And, you know, there was Black Lives Matter. And then there was, you know, there was obviously COVID, there was Trump and all of that. And so I think the media was really trying to find some positive stories out there. And so my story got out. And so I think the media was just like, we need to tell the story of this guy here. So,
yeah, I think one of the things, because the one video, where they get the question about where their mom is, you know, I think, and it speaks to the talent of your kids. I mean, they're so expressive and they're so, you know, they each one have like this great comedic timing and all that, but the expressions on their faces in that video where their attitudes are just sort of like, hello, we have a gay dad and that's just the way it is. And it just, that projection of, which can't be artificial. I mean, it's got to be real and relatable. And I think that was, you know, I really do think that's a wake-up call because, I mean, I experienced that with my kids as well, where, like, especially as they were probably a little bit younger than your kids are now, but probably around the age when you were making the videos, was would have these women come in and they would go, they would take on this thing about, like, oh, the tragedy of no woman in their lives. And they would start smothering my boys. And my boys would look at them like, what the hell are you doing? Like,
sure.
You know, I don't need it. I have a, you know, I have parents. I've got love. I've got everything. You know, you're very nice, but please move away. You know, it's that the thing that comes out of kids that, you know, is just that truth and the wisdom of what the situation is. I want to pivot a little bit to your business because you have got this incredibly great wedding planner business going forward. This is another area where, you know, I am absolutely not a wedding planner, but I've officiated at a number of weddings. I claim the four weddings and a funeral as my mantra because I've officiated at four weddings and a funeral. But and honestly, I could not do what you do. That is like going into the lion's den to be a wedding planner. How did you get into that business?
Well, I mean, honestly, it's a bit cliche. It's like Tim and I got married, and I really loved the process of planning the wedding. And at the time, I was a video editor, which most people don't know about, and I think that's like, that's sort of a light bulb moment for me. They're like, oh, that's why he's good at editing his videos. But I was sort of tired of telling those stories on a screen. And when people were saying that I should do it for a living, then I made the decision that I wanted to get back out in the world away from a computer and start telling people's stories in a different way. And, you know, I loved it from the jump. And I don't know, like, you know, we're 2023, Happy New Year. And I still absolutely love it. I love my couples, most of them, and the vendors are fantastic. And I am in the best city, in my opinion, in the best city in the world to do weddings. I feel like I have everything at my disposal. So, I mean, you know, I'm a big proponent of love in all areas. So I feel really lucky to be doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. It's absolutely the most special moment, but I think you said it all in the little aside there of most of them. it's that minefield there that is a little scary. I mean, it is that it's a couple, you know, and in many ways it's really elevated and exaggerated, but it's the day of their lives, and the you know, for the wrong personality, you know, who gets obsessive, could be scary territory. What is the most incredible wedding that you put on? What made it the most incredible?
I'll give you two quick ones. One is, I'll give you an incredible, and then one that was just really insane in the other direction. So I met this couple last year. He was in his 60s and she was in her 50s, and they approached me, and they knew about my personal story through media, I guess. And they shared with me that they both met through bereavement counseling. They had both lost their partners. They were both left as single parents 12 years before. And they met in bereavement counseling. And, you know, be able to plan a wedding for this couple to have, like, this second chance at love, for me was really magical. And it was at the Rainbow Room, you know, Rockefeller Center. And so, you know, to be able to be a planner, to plan at the Rainbow Room is, it's a dream come true. And for me, that was definitely, will always be one of the highlights for me. And then incredible in the other direction, I did have a bride OD once. She was this French bride, and she came, you know, 100% of her guests were from France. And, she warned me ahead of time. She knew that there was going to be people partying, and, you know, ceremony went off without a hitch. Cocktail hour went off without a hitch. Dinner, people were eating. So that's a good sign, right? Like, okay, people aren't like cracked out yet. People are still eating. And then I see her on the dance floor at reception, and she ends up falling. She cuts herself on her arm, and then I'm bandaging her up. And then I realize, like, she's like, what's the problem? I don't understand. And I'm like, oh man, she is getting messed up. And then I walk out of the bathroom, and there are six bathrooms at this venue. You never have to be in a line. There were lines at every single one of these six bathrooms. And so I had to tell the doorman, like, everybody's getting really coked up right now, and we need to do something about it. And I turn around, and I see five men putting this bride down, and she is ODing, like, white eyes rolling the back, foaming at the mouth, convulsing. And, you know, she lived, she survived. But, you know, for me, that was like and that was in the beginning of my career. So for me, that was like quite the experience.
Oh my God.
and honestly, for the sake of time, that is the edited version.
I can only imagine. I imagined that you have wedding horror stories. I never imagined one that far. That is beyond. Oh my God. I can't
even
imagine. That's too much. Let's move to some of your projects. Kind of parlaying off of your vast experience, you've got a new series. You're co-host on the Crackle. First of all, tell us a little bit about Crackle. I don't know that everybody knows what that is. But then also your new series, Wedding Talk.
Yeah. So it's a brand new. It's a brand new show. And it can be downloaded on Crackle. So what Crackle is, it's an app, right? It's a streaming service, and it's an app. So you could download it on your Apple TV and Roku. And once you download it, you could find a bunch of shows on there, right? And so Wedding Talk is on Crackle, but it's also part of the new Chicken Soup for the Soul network. So right off the bat, you know it's not going to be like a bitchy show. It's going to be positive. I was named one of the co-hosts with Jove Meyer, who's a wedding designer here in New York City, and Tara Lipinski, right? Gold medalist Tara Lipinski. You know, she's the main host, and we show up as her experts. And the show is about showcasing these beautiful luxury wedding videos from all over the world, like from, you know, and each episode has a different theme. So there's like, you know, elopements, there's backyard weddings, which of course means like somebody's estate. And, you know, there's one in our very first episode where there are two men getting married on an active volcano. We get the comments. It's wild. You have to see it. And we get to just talk about it and discuss it. And as experts, we get to give advice. And for me, it honestly, it's just, it's a dream come true. And it really does show that you can merge two worlds together, because I know as a wedding planner, as a host, I would have never been asked to be a host had they not seen my personal feed at NYC Gay Dad and see my personality through that feed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what's been really a blessing for me personally is that both have been continued to feed each other and provide me such, you know, these wonderful opportunities. And it looks like we're going to shoot season two, hopefully in June to air, or July to air in October. And I'm leaving on Monday to go shoot a Valentine's Day special for Love Stories TV, which is similar, you know, showcasing some weddings that are surrounding Valentine's Day. So, it's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that just occurred to me. You're probably gearing up for a big day for you. Valentine's Day has got to be a busy day in your world.
For sure, right? It's like between Christmas and Valentine's Day, that's like engagement season. So, you know,
yeah.
Bring it on. Let's bring on the inquiries and let's bring in the cash into this household.
Now, so one thing, and I'll be honest, it didn't come through with kind of some bio stuff from the agency, but I sort of caught it up elsewhere, is we're actually part of a documentary by HBO Max called The Sex Diaries. Is that happening? What's going on there? I mean, that's a little more, even more personal. Not that the rest of your life is out there.
Yeah, it's a little bit more salacious, isn't it? Yes. So a little over 2 years ago, I filmed a docuseries called Sex Diaries, right? And it's based off of this popular column that HBO decided to make into a show. And so I was approached on my single life on where I was currently. And at the time, I had met someone through TikTok who lives in Toronto. And we were courting each other over a few months, and then we decided to meet. And I made the decision to have HBO document it because I thought that could be an interesting story to tell. And fast forward 2.5 years later, when they told me that the show was actually airing, I was freaking out because at this point I've built this family brand. And I was like, oh my God, this thing, Sex Diaries, and what's it going to look like? I was really honestly stressing out about it. And then, you know, they were really generous and brought me into their office to preview the my segment of the show. And they did a great job. If you watch the series, you'll see plenty of salacious activity. My episode is described as the heart story. It honors my story with Tim. It honors what it's like to be a single father while trying to date. They did a good job. So it already aired. They aired it on December 23rd. Now it's on HBO and you can catch it. And Craig and I are no longer an item. But there's some promising things I think ahead for me. So I'm really excited to explore.
Well, good. Yeah. Well, you certainly know how to love and how to love deeply. So, you need to be able to exercise that talent in your life. Tell me more about the kids. Because these kids, your kids are so special and talented. It's London, Lila, and Avery. Tell me what do you think of when you think of each one of them?
Oh gosh. In a nutshell, I say London is the diva, the fashionista. Lila is the entertainer, the athlete, and I call Avery the balance. He's the only even keel one in this household. The three of us remaining are, you know, we have really big personalities, and Avery does too. You could constantly find him rolling his eyes whenever, you know, any of the three of us are like, you know, up to our antics. And so, yeah, I don't know. There's something about that. I actually really love that all of our personalities are very different from each other. And I think somehow that's just what makes us work and not be bored with each other. And they really do get along. Avery and Lila get along the most because there's sort of, you know, they both love sports. And, you know, London, you know, she's going to grow. She's going to want those manis and those petties and you know, all the things. So she's someone I'm nervous about when she turns into a teenager, which as you know, it all happens fast and it's going to come before we know it. So, but yeah, that's the three of them.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Although I have to say when I was going to become a father and my anticipation of it, the thing, you know, people would say like, you know, okay, if you have a daughter, what, you know, how are you going to relate? Are you going to, you know, and I wasn't worried about any of that stuff. Not that I shouldn't have been because it didn't happen. I had two boys, but my biggest fear was, you know, like at the top of the hour, they were going to get into football and all these stuff. And I was going to have to show up and act like I knew what was going on. That was the part that was like, threatening to me. But, you know, and that happened. And I had to step up to that. My one son had to introduce me to the Super Bowl, and it's like going, oh, okay, all right, fine, sounds good. Let's see, there was something else I was going to ask you about real quick. I know. The one thing that you've talked about before, somebody had asked you about why you present in your social media and, you know, the name of your different pages, et cetera, as a gay dad as opposed to just a dad. And just to let you know, I actually wrote an article on that exact same subject called Why I Write as a Gay Dad Rather Than Just a Dad, which at the time was Yahoo picked it up as a lead article and it went all over, and I made the mistake then of reading the comment section and was accused by all sorts of strangers of being a pedophile and all these awful comments. But that's neither here nor there. But I totally get the heart of exactly what you were saying, but I want you to explain that. Why do you present as a gay dad as opposed to just a dad?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, I mean, look what's been happening, you know, this whole year and last couple years in our community. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to reading that article, you know, because the reality is we all want to be just dad. I don't want people to see me necessarily as a gay dad, right? And so, but the reality is, you know, I had that handle 9 years ago. So, you know, 9 years ago, for me, it was important to put it out there because I didn't know that many gay dads. And so I thought if I label that through the algorithms and through the hashtags, then we'll somehow be able to connect and we'll be able to find each other. I want other gay dads to find me because I want there to be sort of that relatability factor. And really, I ended up growing this beautiful community of other gay dads. And I think that, you know, for example, every year I host a gay brunch for other gay dads every year for Father's Day, and it grew from like 20 to 100 on the last year we did it. And so, and in part that's because we were able to find each other through social media and connecting. And for me, that's the reason why I think at the moment it's important to still identify as a gay dad, because it's important more than ever that we are visible. I actually thought a few years ago that maybe we were kind of like heading in that direction of like, oh, I think, you know, pretty soon I think we can just be dad, right? And then, you know, look what's happened in the last few years. It's almost swinging in the other direction and quickly. And so I feel even more strongly about labeling myself as a gay dad than ever before.
Yeah. No, and I hope you do, because I totally agree, and I think you are needed even more than ever. It is important for your story to be out there, and it is a hard thing because I mean, I do the same thing. It's like we put our families out there, and, you know, it takes a certain degree of bravery, and our kids are part of this, you know, and so it's, you know, but it's important. I mean, it's important for other families, and it's important for all that. I did a thing with my boys called Junk Food Wednesday because I didn't want junk food to be a part of our normal diet and a go-to. So Wednesday became our special holiday of the week where they each got to pick their own junk food that we would, and I would take a picture and put it up on Facebook, and it got really popular. People seeing our pictures, and every Wednesday I'd ask Chronicle does that. But I'm putting my sons out there on social media.
Wait, Rob, sorry, sorry to interrupt, but I have to tell you, that's kind of how we started to get popular on social media, because instead of Wednesday, we did Super Snack Sunday, because I didn't give my kids sugar. Like, I didn't give my kids sugar Monday through Saturday. And then every Sunday, I would have them try something that they've never tried before, like a fudgicle or, you know, a ho-ho, like whatever it was, and a root beer float. And so every week, people were curious every Sunday, like, oh, what are the kids going to try now? So I love that we have that in common.
That's so awesome. I can't even tell you. I love that. So anyway, I just love what you're doing. I absolutely support you. And everybody needs to check out your videos. They're absolutely charming. I did want to mention one that you recently put up about the Lenta app. That actually is near and dear to Brody's heart. He is actually fighting for an artist friend of ours whose work has been plagiarized by them, his style plagiarized by them. And so I really appreciated seeing you step out and make commentary about that. We are down to our last 2 minutes. Let you have the last words. What haven't I asked you that we should get out there real quick?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I think right now it is more important than ever for anyone who has children and anybody who has people that are really close to them is to really show people what compassion and empathy looks like, especially for the young kids. I do strongly believe that the Gen Z generation, which the oldest they're like 24, and my kids are classified Gen Z. I really do think that they're going to be the generation to change this world more than, you know, any generation in a long time. And so I think it's really vital to be able to really show your kids what it's like to be vulnerable, what it's like to be compassionate, what it's like to give, because we want to empower them. And, you know, that's like my biggest thing with my children. And I hope that, you know, all the parents out there in the world and caregivers and people that have loved ones can really put that out as much as possible. So that's really sort of like my main mission at the moment, especially with everything going on in the world.
Well, that is awesome. You are awesome. Thank you for all you do. God bless you and your kids. And they're actually blessed by having you. I mean, and they will be the strong leaders of this world. I guarantee it. For those wanting to find out more of Jose, maybe much to your chagrin, but they will be. You can find Jose at NYC Gay Dad. That's on Instagram. You can also find him on the same address on TikTok at NYC Gay Dad. His website is www.joserolandevents.com. Thank you so much for listening. Again, thank you, Jose, for joining us today. Can't wait to see more from you in the future. And I want to thank Brody Levesque for all of his work. You can read the Los Angeles Blade at losangelesblade.com. Feel free to look up Rob Watson on there as author page. I've got a bunch of stuff too. And a lot of the rest is Brody, and Brody commands the helm there. And again, every day, brand new top-level journalism stories appearing there, lets you know the depth of everything that is going on. And we will be back again next week, Rated LGBT Radio. Tell your friends, subscribe, and definitely show up. Talk to you then.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio!